Line, Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day on this final show before Christmas. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and an early Happy New Year to all of you. And as a Christmas present to all of us, the Preds got right back on track. I think that the vibe, the feeling going into the Vancouver game was, look at this team, 4-game winning streak, what can't they do? And then it was just kind of deflating, losing 5-2 and losing, not just the loss, but just looking how they did. Giving up 5 goals, UC Saros wasn't necessarily the Superman that we're used to seeing him be. It was emotional walking into the tunnel when he was pulled ultimately in the third period. So it was, all right, this is, you're on the road. Going against a good Flyers team, it's not going to be easy, but can we see you bounce back? And the Predators were able to do that, winning 4-2 last night. First goal on the board last night for the Flyers. That was probably the weirdest goal I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was.
It defied the laws of physics. I went back and rewinded it no fewer than 20 times to try and just wrap my mind around how, you know, in the laws of time, space, and gravity, how that happens.
Well, that's because, I mean, I'm convinced we're living in the Matrix. It only that happens only in the Matrix where, you know, the puck goes up the skate, up the leg, up, straight up, and then somehow it curves, hits UC's back, and rolls in, and it rolls into the net. How many times will you see that in a hockey game? Hell, how many times will you see that just people playing hockey, period?
I've seen pucks take pretty weird strange bounces where it does hit the goalie, and usually somewhere from behind the net where the goalie just can't factor in. You can't defend against a play like that. There's no way you would waste your time doing that. Like Chris Mason had one in the first game he ever played for the Predators, had a strange one like that. But the way it came off of the player's skate was crazy. It just was the perfect bounce, and it hit Alex Carrier first. Before that, so it was really a double bounce. So that was great.
A double doink.
And Morgan Frost, the player for the Flyers, he was the look on his face said everything. He was literally laughing going back to the bench. He's like, "Yeah, guys, I meant to do that."
I would have been. Hey, man, he must have been really, really a good person this year because Santa rewarded him.
Santa
very
helped
early,
him out.
Yes. A couple of days before Christmas.
Despite the weirdness of it all, which I think will go down in the history of one of the oddest, strangest goals in the history of the NHL, the Predators are able to scratch and claw their way back due to 2 goals from Philip Tomasino. Philip Tomasino now has 3 goals in the last 3 games. Now, Philip Tomasino, I think, has been maybe the face of inconsistency throughout his tenure with the Nashville Predators. It's ups and it's downs. It's can you count on him? There's periods where, oh, yeah, Philip Tomasino's on this team. I kind of kind of forgot about him. He was kind of dormant for a while. It's been good to see some production from Philip Tomasino over these last couple of games, last couple of weeks, really. His first multi-goal game, was it not, last night?
First one.
So, Willie, Philip Tomasino, just kind of how we've gotten here. I'm pleased by what I've seen the last few games, but also I'm jaded by maybe the history of Philip Tomasino. What can we maybe expect from Philip Tomasino moving forward?
I think what you have to hope for is he's still only 22. And so what you're hoping for is more stretches of what you're seeing now and less stretches of, you know, the games where he just wasn't a factor and was finding himself a healthy scratch. I think if you go back to the beginning of last year, remember there were a lot of people that were really surprised that he didn't make the team out of training camp or after the Global Series. They sent him to Milwaukee, and they left him there for a long time. And remember, that was a thing on Twitter. Why are you doing this to Tomasino? You got to bring up Tomasino. He's better than what you got there. But I think he really benefited from that time. And you can have a lot of peaks of value. I was picturing this. Like, the if you took all the young players and you did a graph, Tomasino, Glass, Parsonen, Evangelista, it would look like a roller coaster, right? It wouldn't be like this straight upward growth period, right? There would be some ups and then some valleys and then some back ups and then backwards. But hopefully, as you keep going, there's going to be more good than bad. I'm hoping that that's the case, because right now, Yusuf Parson gets scratched last night, right? I thought he was turning the corner before, but now he's taking a little setback. But that's probably just the reality of being 21 or 22 in the league, unless you are just off the charts talented. You're going to have some ups and downs. The good part is they've had enough of those guys contributing enough of the time that they're finding success for the team, mm-hmm. right? And they're able to kind of grow at their own rate. And so let's hope that this is a big jump for Tomasino that is going to happen for a while. But I don't know. There could be another setback, but mm-hmm. hopefully as we keep going, there's more steps forward to come.
But he's had some good looks on
the net. Yeah.
And it's not like he's not putting together. Working.
He's got 11 points in the last 17 uh-huh. games. So that's starting to look a little bit more like a guy that mm-hmm. can be consistent.
So it's just one of those deals with him. Just keep going, and eventually it'll break through. Because it seems like he has had the looks, he has had the opportunities, but it's sort of snake bitten in a sense that, mm-hmm. you know, you get it, you shoot it, it just don't go in.
Yeah, and I think when you get a couple to go in,
then
you start feeling more confident.
Better, yes.
You feel confident. Like you think you can do it. Mm-hmm. You've done it in the minors. You've done it in the junior all your life. But then you haven't done it at the highest level. But then you have that game like that. You're like, wow, okay, I can do this here. I want the puck in the big situations. I can make the play. Maybe that leads to more success. That's what you have to hope for.
Andrew Burnett was asked about Philip Tomasino. And look, you mentioned Yusuf Parson, and we've seen that throughout the entirety of this season. Andrew Burnett is not afraid to take shots is not the right word in the slightest, but he's not afraid to publicly criticize some of his players whenever some constructive criticism or criticism of a player is warranted or needed. He's not afraid to healthy scratch a player or send a player back down if that's what's best for the team. But Andrew Burnett was asked about Philip Tomasino last night. This is what Andrew Burnett had to say.
What do you say about Phil? I know he's had some consistency issues in and out of the lineup to see him get too tight, including the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, I'm proud of him. I mean, from where we started the year through training camp, through the part of the year, you know, it was a little bit of work to get him to play at a certain pace and understand kind of my expectations of him. And he put the work in, and he's been playing exceptional here the last month or so. And it's nice to see him get rewarded tonight because he's had so many good looks and he was driving a lot of offense for us.
And that's what you want to see, the development. That's what you want to see is, look, you've been inconsistent, but now you've been playing at a pretty high level. Do I expect Philip Tomasino to have multiple goals in every single game that he plays? No, I don't. You're going to have your peaks and your valleys. But as long as the peaks outnumber the number of valleys that you do have, I can get on board with that, with a young team and a young guy and a team who is really focused on development. You want to win games, you want to make the playoffs, but you also are focused on development. I think that kind of plays into something that we talked about yesterday when on the PDO cast, Dmitry Filipovich's podcast, he was talking about Philip Forsberg and how having a guy like Ryan O'Reilly playing next to him has unlocked the second level of Philip Forsberg. But like we said, you're not going to have Ryan O'Reilly forever. You're going to need some of these young guys to fill that role of a top forward or a top center in this league. Could Philip Tomasino potentially turn into that?
That is the question. I think that's how the team is designed to grow. That's how it's set up for Barry Trotz is let's see who can grow into the consistent scorer. Mm-hmm. Can Tomasino? They're probably not all going to do it, right? The guys that are there now. And then there's a whole another group in Milwaukee that they're hoping something comes out of that group. Like Joakim Kemmel's playing great right now. It is a 19-year-old in the AHL lighting it up. Fedor Svechkov, all these guys, they're a little bit younger than the group that's there now. But in the next 2 or 3 years, this is what Barry Trotz is looking for. He's trying to leave some room there so that if, in a perfect world, 2 or 3 of these guys emerge, and now you've got another top line in there, top 6 guys who can get you consistently 20, 25 goals, consistent scoring on a nightly basis, then you can take Ryan O'Reilly as he ages and settle him down in the lineup, second line center, third line center. That's kind of what they are hoping for in the long range. And in the meantime, O'Reilly and Forsberg continue to play great hockey to sort of carry the young guys. But hopefully it'll kind of balance out where they don't have to do as much carrying and the young guys start picking up the slack.
that was kind of the vision that I saw at the beginning of the season of, all right, let's bring in these veterans, the proven veterans, that it can kind of be the bridge between now until whenever the young guys are ready to take over the reins. Other thing that I wanted to touch on was Yakov Trenin in his ejection in the game last night. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. My impression has always been you call it a major, review it, and downgrade it to a minor if you believe that's appropriate. I always raise an eyebrow and I'm incredibly skeptical of two-minute minors that are called, like what was called on Yakov Trenin last night, and then upgraded to a major. Just seems a little wonky there.
Sometimes, you know, we see something, and what we'll do is we'll walk over during the intermission to the other broadcast booth, and this is what we did. Jim Johnson and Brian Boucher were calling for the Flyers, and we're comparing notes, you know, because we're looking, we're right next to each other in the same booth. We're giving a look during while it's going on and going, what? How crazy is it, by the way? We're just talking to Elliot Friedman about hits like this, and the Predators hadn't had one. I think I jinxed it. Immediately, like, oh boy, here we go. So the hit itself that resulted in a five-minute major and ejection for boarding, the end result, that's not a crazy call. Like, I can see that. It's debatable. I've seen that, you know, if you get a little benefit of the doubt, maybe it's 2 minutes for boarding. If you don't, if you want to really crack down, okay, five and a game misconduct.
And
but
the NHL
how
wants
they,
to crack down on those kind of hits.
Right, this was the discussion with Elliot, that there's been some of these lately, and when that number rises up, you got to calm things down and you got to crack down. So, okay, in that context, I see it. But the weird part is, yes, they went on the loudspeaker, the referee, and said 2 minutes for an illegal check to the head. Then they huddle up and they change it to 5 minutes, but still a legal check to the head. Now, there's a problem with that. As soon as you look at the replay once, he didn't hit him in the head. He hit him in the back, still boarding by definition, but he never hit him in the head, and that's a different thing. His head, because of the force of the hit, hits the glass, and that's why he was startled for a while, and Frost ended up, fortunately, not being hurt at all. But this was the question I had. Like you said, you're supposed to signal for five and then go look.
Yeah.
But he went from two, and I thought, well, they made the call.
Yeah.
And your call is your call. If you call for two, you're not supposed to go to the monitor. But then they huddled up and said, wait a minute, we need to look at this. So let's change the call on the ice to five. But then not only did they changed the time or the type of penalty from minor to major, by the time they came out of the review, which was very long, they had changed it from illegal check to the head to boarding, which is what it was. But can you do that? That's like saying I'm going in to look at a fumble, and then I notice, oh, there was a face mask on that play.
You can't call a face mask.
You're not reviewing for a face mask. You're reviewing for a fumble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so how far can you take that? They took some liberties in there, and so that was the question that I think we all had with that. Was the
so he shouldn't have never got ejected.
Well,
in a sense,
if they had
called
boarding
two,
right away,
then it went to the five, and then it because they said it was a head, you know, a shot to the head, but it wasn't a shot to the head.
It was not a shot to the head. That was wrong, and they realized that as soon as they looked at the replay.
But why did
he never
kick
hit
him
in
out
the
then?
Head?
Because of excessive boarding?
Because it was boarding, and you can do that. You can say it was boarding and deserve it.
Yeah.
But it was almost like you got they got the right answer, but the teacher looks at your work and how you got there.
The
like, I don't think you used the process. You weren't using the equation.
So they don't give
about.
You the full 100%. They give you, that's about a 80. You got the answer, but you didn't get
I don't know
it the
how
way
you got
I wanted
it.
You to get it.
The process was a little wonky. If that end result was called to begin with, I can see it. But whenever you review something for that long, sometimes it makes me think, is it really there? Like if it warrants, you know, either a 5 minute or a major or an ejection, shouldn't it be obvious? Like when you see targeting and it is blatant, drop your head, going for the head, you almost spear someone. It's like, I don't need to review that. That's targeting. I don't need to look it over. If you need to go back over and over and over in slow-mo and frame by frame by frame and continue to look at
it's
it,
not what
maybe you're trying to find something that's not really there. And that's kind of how I felt last night was, are we being a little nitpicky?
Yeah, and that's where the initial call, right? What was your first call? The first call was 2 minutes, which you can't even look on the monitor. Mm-hmm. Then they had to move that to 5 minutes so they could look on it. But so then you're kind of saying, well, I'm staying with the call on the ice. Well, your first notion was a two-minute penalty for something that actually didn't happen. It wasn't a check to the head.
And so the first call, I think, should mean something.
Right. So they changed the first call. Huh?
Did they break protocol okay.
That's what we need to find out.
You had five. You initially said it's five. Or you initially said, you know, you want to eject them. But then you go back and you say, well, maybe let's lower it to two. But you can't get two.
They went from two
to five to kicking him out.
Yeah. So that is that's what I would like to get an explanation on. And I actually have been asking around to see if we can find out more on it. Of course, they got another game tomorrow at 1. It'll be, as long as there's no supplemental discipline, which I haven't heard anything on to this point, and they play tomorrow at 1, so I would think if there's something going on there, you would hear it. But I don't think it's going to be that.
Supplemental discipline, I think, is unwarranted.
I think so, and because he paid a pretty big price.
Yes.
He's got to sit out the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And the Predators were down to 10 forwards.
His dad 5 minute
major. Yakov's dad was not there.
Okay, never mind.
But the other dads were there, and I'm sure they had his back. But all that to say, that was a pretty crazy sequence there. And it came in the context of this sensitivity for big hits, but also it kind of asks the question, use of the replay system. How much leeway does the referee have? Because that guy took a lot of leeway. Both officials. They talked it over, and of course they're on the headset with the Toronto headquarters back there, and they're so I don't know what that conversation was like.
So they must have given an okay.
As soon as you watch the player, like he did not hit him in the head. Uh-huh. His head hit the glass after the boarding.
So they must have gotten
it. This is not a legal check to the head. So that's your first problem right there.
Yeah. Right.
You shouldn't get. I mean, you can get ejected for boarding. Hell, he just got ejected for boarding yesterday.
People have gotten a game misconduct for a heavy boarding.
But
if they'd gotten that right,
call.
That would have helped. But they said illegal check to the head. And like, okay, if you're reviewing for illegal check to the head, that wasn't illegal check to the head.
Mm-hmm. Is there an appeal process, Willie?
Well,
as far as his fine,
I suppose if there were going to be something like that, there is an appeal process if he were to get fined. Now, hopefully he doesn't. Hopefully they just move on and you say, look, they got through it. It was what it was. We may have messed it up, something in here. But I think from the official standpoint, from a procedure, you're getting into a slippery slope. If you go in and you're reviewing for an illegal check to the head, you see a different foul. Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to do that?
Because
what if he saw another guy happen to high stick a guy when you looked at the replay? Could you add that? Hey, we reviewed everything there, and there were actually three penalties on three different guys. So we're going to add these other two that we didn't see.
We're going to retroactive those penalties.
So I don't know.
But how about the save by UC Saros on the break? Good Lord.
Great save.
I mean, we
tie game, breakaway, game on the line.
Exactly.
That's a game saving.
That could have changed the whole momentum of the game. Yep. Had they gotten that breakaway goal. But UC being UC, we talked about it yesterday. Mm-hmm. I said, listen, if you get rid of UC, I'm done. I'm done with hockey, period.
Derek is going to boycott.
Yes.
He's going to have a sign. He's going to hold up a sign in front of Bridgestone Arena every single day.
Exactly. I'm going out there.
That is the encouraging thing to me, and that's really what I wanted to look for, was how does this team respond? And it doesn't necessarily come to fruition in the wins and loss column, but how do you look? How are you going out there and fighting and playing? How are you able to bounce back from a loss that was, frankly, you didn't look very good. You didn't play very well. So how are you able to turn around and still, continue to fight for it? And they had fight in themselves last night. Mm-hmm. Will you bring up a game that the Predators have tomorrow night.
Tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, 1 o'clock.
Excuse me, tomorrow afternoon. Hosting the Dallas Stars and one Matt Duchene. Matt Duchene is playing really well in Dallas. 29 points in 30 games. And I already know that there is a fraction of the Predators fan base that's looking at it and thinking, well, Matthew Shane goes to Dallas and he plays really well. Why couldn't he do this in Nashville? Or how much money is the Nashville Predators organization paying Matthew Shane to produce for the Dallas Stars? My thought on that is, not once, not a single time throughout this entire season have I thought, man, you know what this Preds team needs? Matthew Shane. Not a one. Not a one.
But, I mean, you know that's how things happen, you know, when you have a guy on your team that has produced, but for whatever reason, you know, his play starts to slump. And then he goes somewhere else and he starts playing really well. And then it's all of a sudden, we could have kept him. We should have kept him. And no, it's not about – it's about what you're trying to create within your locker room and on the ice. What he's doing for Dallas, he wouldn't have probably done for the Nashville Predators. They're asking him to play a different way. Nashville was asking him to play one way. And it wasn't, ultimately, at the end, it wasn't working for the team. So you ship him away or you trade him away or whatever. And a lot of times guys go to another team and it works for them because the philosophy and the play style fits more of who they are as players. It fit for Nashville for a few years, but then, you know, what? He went through, what, two coaches? Duchesne? He went through Laviolette
and then Hines. Yeah.
So it changes. The style of play changes. Now he's in a place where they're not asking him to be one of the frontline guys, but the style of play actually works in its favor. So
the unanswered question is, because you referred to that, and we played a clip from you yesterday, that podcast, the PDO podcast that Dmitry Filipovic did on Forsberg, needless to say, a deep dive. My brain was
deep
hurting after about 15 minutes of that. And it was great stuff, but I was like, I got to take a break. I got to clear my head.
It was very in the weeds inside baseball. Numbers.
Tremendous detail.
Yes.
The why and the what and what are these little things that Forsberg does. It's fascinating. It's called the PDO podcast, and look it up. It'll be, if you're a Forsberg fan, and for me, I've been watching him all these years, all these games, and I'm like, yeah, they're saying all these things, slowing it down to the fine detail. I'm like, yeah, I've seen him do that. But when it's happening so fast, you don't even really appreciate it all sometimes.
You're
like, wow, yeah, he does do that. But one of the points they made was that in this style of Andrew Burnett's, get it up the ice. Get it moving. Let's get on the rush. Get it to him. That this is a great fit for Forsberg. The unanswered question is, would Matt Duchesne maybe have benefited from that? Just the way, the strengths of his game. And the answer is maybe, yeah, maybe. But I think the overriding factor was the chemistry, right? The price tag, what he's bringing to the locker room, the leadership. And so I think that the move that they made, nobody's going to second guess that right now with the way the Predators are. So the way I kind of look at it, and when he signed with Dallas, we all did kind of say, ooh, as maybe a secondary guy that doesn't have to carry the load, doesn't have to be the leader, doesn't have to be the guy who everything's riding on, he might flourish. So it's like a happy divorce, right? It's like you part ways and both parties are happy. The thing is, they're in the same division, so that's a great drama going into tomorrow, I think.
It's like y'all live in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
Just like I said, all of your exes.
Shane still lives here, so he's probably sitting in his house right now.
All of your exes live in the central division. It is truly something. But yeah, I think that it comes down to expectation, where Matt Duchesne probably felt a little bit of relief not having that $8 million price tag hanging above his head, where he could just go out and play and not be the go-to guy.
And just for drama purposes, we all get on the bus last night. Mm-hmm. Big win. Hey, everybody, great job. And we're like, oh, let's see what Dallas is doing. It's in overtime. We put it up on the phones, and who scores the game-winning goal in overtime
Duchesne.
With 9 seconds left in the overtime? Duchesne. So Duchesne was like, oh, here I come, Nashville. Okay.
Coming
here
in
it
hot.
Is. Here we go. Coming in hot.
All right, coming up next, we'll chat with Chris Mason. We saw kind of two sides of UC Saros. Not a great game from him against Vancouver, and then turns around and has a stellar game in Philadelphia. We'll kind of deep dive into the mind of a goaltender with Chris Mason coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie D. Mays. Hey, join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. for our NFL pregame show. We'll break down the Titans' Week 16 matchup against the Seahawks and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Beast Unleashed. Preds get the win in Philadelphia 4-2 last night, a bounce back after a 5-2 loss against the Vancouver Canucks earlier this week. And joining us to break it all down is Chris Mason. C. Mace is brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C. Mace, I kind of want to just deep dive into the mind of a goalie. We saw a not-so-great game from UC Saros earlier this week against Vancouver. He was pulled in the third period, and you saw the frustration. Andrew Burnett even touched on how emotional he was after the game, and then turns around, has the performance that he does last night. Really, what are the goals that win, and there's just truly nothing that you can do about it. So just kind of break that down for me, maybe where UC Saros' mind was at between those two games and the bounce back that we saw from him from Vancouver to now Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly. But I have to warn you, Caroline, once you go into the mind of a goalie, there's no turning back.
It might be a dark place. It might be a very, very scary place.
You ready to go down this rabbit hole?
Yeah, like walking into a haunted house, perhaps.
Yeah. No, but, you know, honestly, especially the difference between guys that are good, every goaltender playing in the National Hockey League has elite skill, you know, and all those types of things. But I think what separates the elite goaltenders, the best in the world, are the guys that are able to have a performance like that and not let it leak into the game after, the shift after they let in a bad goal. They just have an innate ability to be able to, you know, brush off what just happened. And as emotional, you rarely see Saros show any emotion, even in games where things aren't going his way, or he may not be playing his best, or the team in front of him's not, you know, doing the job up to the standard, and you let in a lot of goals. There's obvious frustration there when he slammed his stick after he got pulled in Vancouver. And, you know, the best guys are able to go out there the next game and it doesn't faze him. And early in that game, he lets in that, you know, that fluky goal behind the net. A lot of guys would say, oh my God, here we go again. You know, it's what's going on. I can't do anything right. And then it seeps into the rest of the game and your performance is below the standard. You know, that you expect and that your teammates expect and that you've set for yourself. But Saros is incredible in regard to the way that he can bounce back from those things. It's just the laser focused mentality, and to be able to not hold on to that awful feeling when you let goals on and let that affect your play. I think, like I said, there's very few that I would consider the best goaltenders in the world. Vasilevsky I would put in there, obviously Shesterkin, Ottinger maybe now, and Saros are some of those guys that they hardly have any bouts of inconsistency, especially once you get to that level that he's playing at now. And I thought that was, you know, really impressive, because I was wondering too. I was very interested to see how he'd bounce back from that one after getting so you know, emotionally upset after getting pulled.
Bring up a inconsistency. I mean, UC Saros has been the face of consistency. Philip Tomasino may be the face of inconsistency throughout this season. There have been bouts where I'm thinking, where is Philip Tomasino? I barely even notice him. Two goals last night, three goals in the last three games. Is this maybe, what have you seen from Philip Tomasino, and is this maybe what we can expect more of moving forward with Philip Tomasino?
I think you're starting to see what he is capable of as a player, as a full-time player in the National Hockey League. I think like any player, I know personally when I was his age, I wouldn't be, you know, I wasn't ready to handle the pressure of, you know, the NHL necessarily, the demands, you know, the microscope that you're under. Once you set a standard, you know, that's expected of you. And once you start playing well, that's what your coach expects every single night. And you've got a lot of things going on. You've got, you know, life coming at you. You're an adult now. You've got responsibilities away from the rink. You're living on your own. There's a lot of things that go into being a young player in a league that has such a high pressure and such a big spotlight on every single thing that you do. And I think that's why there's a lot of inconsistency with younger players. And I think Andrew Burnett's been really effective of using the reset with the guys at the right time. You know, and I think Phil Tomasino got sat out a bunch of games consecutively, worked on his game. He took ownership, I think, which is a mature thing for a young kid, because you can either go and pout and say, oh, I should be, you know, in there for this guy. And, you know, that's, this guy's not playing well, I was playing better him, and all those kind of excuse types of things. Or you go out and you make yourself better at practice and ready for your next opportunity. And I thought once he came back in the lineup, he has been consistent. His work ethic looks a lot, he's a lot more determined of a player. And I think once you, you know, you show yourself consistency and you play the systems, your confidence goes up. And I think we're seeing a confident Phil Tomasino. And, you know, he's a high draft pick, first round pick. He had obviously lit up junior leagues. He had great success in the American League. And I think this is the hardest one to crack right now. And we're starting to see, I think, you know, what he's going to project like as an NHL player.
Now, see, Mace, what did you think of Yakov Trenin's ejection? He went from, you know, having 11 forwards to 10, that could have, you know, that could have been detrimental to the Predators last night, but they were able to overcome the ejection. But did you think it was, the play was warranted? The ejection was warranted?
I don't think so. I think anytime, I guess, you know, a player goes down, there's an emphasis right now in the NHL to take those, you know, hits from behind. But I watched it again about five times, because I'm like, I just don't see, you know, an intent to injure somebody. He barely hit him. He was actually stopping, and he just, you know, continued in to make contact. He didn't push forward. It was just a case of a bigger, stronger player, and a player that was, I don't know, I guess he was just had no idea that Trenin was there. But the fact that, you know, his head hit the glass, I can see, you know, why there was the thought that maybe we should kick him out of the game. Personally, I think it was a 2-minute penalty. Frost was out the next shift, but I understand, you know, the gravity of these things. I definitely wouldn't want to be the one making that call as a referee, but they had a lot of indecision too, because they were down there. That review took, it felt like 5 minutes, and they must have watched that hit 50 times, and you rarely see that. So they wanted to get it right, and I guess in their opinion, that's what they thought. But me personally, I didn't think it was a 5-minute penalty, and I think the both coaches kind of had, from the looks on their face, the same kind of feeling as I did. But that's just me.
Now, what do you think about the Flyers' first goal? We were sitting here talking about that at the beginning of the show, and me as, you know, a infant and watching hockey, I don't think I've ever seen a goal like that, especially not in the NHL. Now, I'm sure there has been, you know, some crazier goals, but man, that one was one of the craziest.
And Mace, I thought about your first game as the Predator, weird plays like that, but maybe you probably flashed back to that in your mind when you saw that.
Well, exactly, and like D-Mace was saying, it's so rare when things like that happen. It has to be the perfect storm in order for something like it gets deflected off Carey's stick. He breaks up the play and hits. I have no idea how it got the elevation off of Frost, if it hit the top of his skate to get that angle, and then and Saros, you know, that's hard enough for a goaltender's plays behind the net, because your body's facing forward and your head is obviously looking back, and then you have to, you know, change what side of your body you're looking on depending on where the puck is. And it just went, it was a perfect bounce right up and over in the back of the net. And that's one of the things I mentioned for Caroline's question, is what impressed me about Saros is you want to come out and you perform the best that you can, and all of a sudden something like that happens. Like you basically have to just shrug your shoulder and say, hey, what am I going to do about that? That's crazy. But yeah, it's rare. It's kind of funny, you know, not when it happens against you. And I guess the old hockey gods, as they call them, they were looking out for Frost on that play. But that was, I don't think that could ever be repeated.
But I'm trying to remember what happened to you in that first game, Mace, but it was something similar. The puck popped up in the air. Everybody lost sight of it, and all of a sudden it landed right behind you.
It was my first NHL start, and I was playing against the Blackhawks, and there was a shot from the point, and our guy went out, and it ramped off of his stick. It went up into the air. Nobody knew where it was. I was doing the same thing. I was retreating on the goal line. Nobody knew where this puck was, and all of a sudden it must have been like over scoreboard height, came down and landed right behind me in the net. It was like, I couldn't believe it, but it was something like that. Nobody knew where the puck was, and all of a sudden it landed in the net. I'm like, oh my God, this is my first NHL start. Here we go.
Yeah, it's like, of all things to happen in your first game, like, come on, give the guy a break.
Yeah.
And we lost 2-1.
That's a bummer. Yes.
That's the killer. Yeah. Oh, I was even thinking that, you know, if the Preds lost last night like 4-3, I think that one goal would just be lingering over everyone's heads.
It's crazy. Interesting. We linked the two together. Mace, you were in there. And of course, one of your teammates at the time, Thomas Focun. UC Soros passes Thomas Focun last night. And Thomas Focun, just thinking back on him, he's a pretty special goalie and a great story of expansion, right? He was cast off by the Canadians, and then they had no idea what they had. And then here's Thomas Focun turns into a great goalie for a long time.
Yeah, and I think when the significance of that is, I think back in that day when, you know, the Preds were trying to, you know, forge an identity and turn this into a hockey market, he was kind of the first real, I would say, star that, you know, played here for many, many years. It was a great story. Obviously a big time fan favorite and face of the franchise during his years. And he's a real important player, I think, in the history of the Predators organization and such a big part of the community. And he's just, one of those great stories, just a blue-collar guy that wasn't a high prospect. He came in and he had that, you know, gritty blue-collar attitude like a lot of our team did, a lot of Barry Trotz, and he really resonated with the fans. And not only that, his ability, he won a lot of hockey games on a team that probably shouldn't win a lot of hockey games. And it's pretty cool to see, you know, Soros, depending on, you know, his future, that's a pretty big milestone. And then he's only got one more guy to pass on the list. And I think if he remains a Predator for his career, he's got a good shot at doing that, which is even crazier to think that, somebody could eclipse Pekka. But it's just a testament to Sorrow, but also you get to recognize a Predator great in Thomas Focun.
So, Mace, we're getting close to the halfway point of the season. Not there yet, but all these games have gone by, and the Predators have not played the Stars yet. You're going to see them for the first time. They've played really well. They're one of the top scoring teams in the league, and Mr. Duchesne has really produced for them. I was just telling the story before you came on that we all were watching on the bus where he scores the game-winning goal last night. So pretty nice little dramatic storyline coming in for this first meeting.
Yeah, and I think for Matt Duchesne, I think that's a perfect fit for him. I think, you know, depending on, you know, how long you're with an organization or what your role is with the team and the locker room, you know, it suits guys and fits guys differently. And I think for him going into Dallas, he doesn't have to carry the pressure, or as some players maybe take it as a burden of being, you know, the guy, the leader on the team. Everything, you know, kind of revolves around you, and it's a lot of added pressure, I think. And I think Dallas, he doesn't have to be that. He can go out and play free of that weight. They've got a really good hockey team. It's one of the deepest teams in the National Hockey League. So I just think it really suits, the type of player that he is to be able to go in there and not have to, you know, worry about the burden of, you know, being the older guy, the leader on the team, the one that always has to answer the questions. And it seems to be, to be working out for both the Predators and for Matt Duchesne. So that's good to see.
See, Mace, appreciate you for joining us as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow afternoon, and we'll chat with you next week. And Merry Christmas to you and yours, C-Mace.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Guys, for sure.
Merry
awesome.
Christmas.
Thanks.
Yeah, enjoy time with your family. Thanks, C-Mace. Chris Mason, he is the very best. We'll react to what he had to say coming up next. We'll get right into your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores take on Memphis on the road. Tip-off at 3 p.m. with pregame beginning at 2:30 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com.
Andrew, what can you say about the battle from your team tonight, especially being down to 10 forwards?
Yeah, I thought it was outstanding all game. Felt really competitive on the puck, doing the things we didn't do Tuesday. I thought we did them tonight, and I think we played about a 58-minute game that I felt very comfortable with the way we played.
That was Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. Of course, the Preds take down the Philadelphia Flyers on the road 4-2. Quick turnaround, taking on the Dallas Stars at home tomorrow. Puck drop at 1 o'clock, and of course, you can find that right here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Want to get in your phones on this. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We have several texts about this because we just mentioned it. Dallas Stars come into town. Matt Duchene come into town. Matt Duchene has 29 points in 30 games. He's playing well for the Stars, which is something that we even brought up the day that Matt Duchene was sent to Dallas. We even said, I don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it if Matt Duchene plays well in Dallas, because it wasn't just the play on the ice. It was a culture move from Barry Trotz, from Amanda Brunette, that they just didn't want Matt Duchene in the locker room. But several texts in our text line along these lines of, I wonder what Matt Duchene would have been able to do, how he would have played in Amanda Brunette's system.
Yeah, that's the unanswerable question, right? Because we'll never know the answer. And I think you could say that maybe he would have style-wise matched. But if you did that, then you probably wouldn't have Ryan O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. You probably wouldn't have Gus Nyquist. And the changes that they made have worked really, really well. So I don't think you can argue with it. But that's just with the style and the actual points production. But the whole thing that's really hard to be able to quantify, right, is the value of the culture in the locker room right now. It is 100 times better. And I'm not putting all of that on Duchene, Johansson, or any of the guys that were there last year that aren't there this year. But whatever their theory was, and Barry Trotz tried to articulate it throughout the whole offseason, like, I want serial winners. I want guys that I know are going to rub off on the younger guys and set examples. That has worked incredibly well. That's a big reason why they're 19-14 after being 5-10, where a weak group could have crumbled, right? But that's a strong group. Roman Josi was just on with Chase and Joe the other day talking about how a guy like Colton Sissons has really grown into another guy who's worthy of being captain kind of stuff. He's a leader, right? He's a mature veteran now. That, by the way, is having a great year. Two more assists last night for him. He's playing fantastic in the system. So that it's definitely a legit question. I've thought about it myself, but like you said, Caroline, how often have you thought, oh wow, what if this team had Duchene?
Never.
I haven't either. I haven't either. And I've moved on. He's moved on. It's noteworthy what he's doing. And so it's going to be fun to see how they lock horns tomorrow.
Again, he's doing well there. That doesn't automatically mean that he would have done well here this season under this system. New coaches or whatnot, different players. So, I mean, I understand, what fans are saying. But, Barry made the decision to part ways with certain veteran guys for a reason. You got to trust that what he saw was, better for the team in the long run, So, yeah, Duchene might have done well. But then again, what if he wouldn't have done well? Then everybody would have been screaming, oh, you should have got rid of him. You should have got rid of him when
he's
you had an opportunity.
Weight. I mean, exactly. They both, Johansson and Duchene, going back to when they were exposed in the expansion draft, they got labeled, right? The fans had made up their, oh, these guys, they're not worth it.
Exactly.
And even they both had great bounce-back years. Remember, 2 years ago, they both played really well.
Yeah.
But still, it was like, what, $8 million? I don't know. I'm not getting enough for that. And so it's unfair to some degree because, like, you can't blame a guy for making money. Exactly. Like, that's the contract you signed. That's what you have to pay him.
Right.
But when your production doesn't add up to the money you're paying, you get – it weighs on you. So it's a lot easier, I'm sure, for both of those guys to say, I'm not as much as expected of them. They're playing a different role, but they're doing pretty well in their roles. Johansson maybe not quite as much as Duchene, but Johansson at least had his moments.
I don't see how guys operate under that thought process. I don't. In sports, at least.
You mean from the fans' perspective?
No. Like from a player's perspective, I like it better when not a lot is expected from me. Like, I can go out and play my game. Don't you want, as a competitor, don't you want that pressure? Don't you want that, thing that makes you come to work every day knowing you got to give it your all? Not, oh, they're not expecting much of me, so I can come in here and, just if I don't feel like playing hard, I don't have to play hard because – they're not expecting me to play hard every night. I don't understand that sort of thought process. It's foreign to me, honestly. It really is.
I totally get it.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes expectations can almost be crippling.
Yeah.
Like, I, for example, transfer portal is going crazy in college.
And I'm just saying in sports. I'm not saying in life. I'm just saying in sports.
And transfer portal is going crazy. Kyle McCord is the starting quarterback at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to transfer. And I thought, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. You're the starting quarterback at Ohio State. It's one of the best programs in America.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to walk away from that? And what I had heard was, look, he wasn't performing up to a certain level, and the expectations from the fan, the commentary from the fans, it was just too much on him.
Mm-hmm.
And as I totally understand where you're coming from. Of you want those expectations.
Exactly.
You want a lot to be expected of you. You want to be able to deliver. But I think that, you know, sometimes when the expectations are so high, it can just weigh on mm-hmm. you. And maybe sometimes guys just need a new start.
Exactly.
A new perspective, a new place, just a fresh start. And that's looking like it's doing Matthew Shane fairly well in Dallas.
Well, good for him. I mean, until, you know, when is it? Saturday afternoon?
Yep, 1 o'clock game.
Well, let him do great, you know, before and after. Not while he's here, okay? Hey, NES, cut off his lights or something in his house when he go there and sleep. He has no heat, no lights, and that. He's just uncomfortable, okay?
Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tonight for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders are on the road facing Southern Utah with pregame beginning at 7 o'clock and tip-off at 7:30. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3classichits.com.